This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pickle League Podcast, episode 553, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. And we are live.
In person. We are live.
In person.
Alive.
Freezes in the rain. Driving twisted to the suburbs.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pickle League Podcast. It's episode 553. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I am live here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello. All in the same room.
So, sound quality, not our normal level.
Yeah, but those are the trade-offs you make.
We make up for it with jolly good humor.
Yeah, put us all in a room and the sound quality goes down. Yeah. Separate us, sound quality goes up. That's how it works. It's an equation. It's math, people.
You can take the word sound out of that, too.
We are iFanboy. We like comics and read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite comic called the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books that came out. So we do some listener mail. We give some powers out. It's a fun time for everybody. Spoiler warning, there'll be some spoilers. This is a review show, so exercise some caution. And this week, I did not have the pick, but Ron.
I did.
Ron had the pick of the week.
I did indeed have the pick of the week. And this week, the pick of the week goes to The Black Monday Murders, number 2, written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Tom Coker. And this is the second mammoth issue,
Connor's shaking his head like, come on.
Well, no, but I gotta give Hickman credit. Like, you think about a way to do something different in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I, having the extra long, having the extra long first issue is something that especially a lot of image books do, where to give you a lot of a large chunk to pull you in. And wasn't sure whether the second issue was going to do that after the first issue came in at 60 pages, but no,
did it.
This one came in at 60 pages as well too, but for $4.99. So
it's like 2.5 comics for a little bit more than one. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
just I had 25 books this week. Plus 11 from a month ago that I didn't read when I was on vacation. Plus,
that sounds like a Connor problem,
plus
not a Hickman
six
problem.
More than I hadn't read last time.
I'm guessing it's a Tom Coker problem too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, just he gets that script and goes.
Did they say it's like 2 years ago? Like, I was wondering when I was reading this. Like, geez, how much of a lead time?
The art is not rushed in any capacity.
No.
You know, like it is very well done. I've got to say, I don't know if it's the extended page length. And you're getting more of the story in one batch or whatever. But Hickman is, we know Hickman's creator-owned work is pretty well thought out, and he's really good at universe building. I am enraptured with this whole story and the world that it's in, and I think the extended pages allow you to really get lost in it. It almost feels it's the equivalent. Reading a standard comic book is like watching a TV show. This feels like watching a movie.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I read both of these back to back. Yeah, it's a lot of reading to do.
Yep.
It's like reading a trade, actually.
Yeah, 120 pages.
Though. Yeah. It's a very interesting world. I don't know that I'm following it, which is par for the course usually with Hickman's indie stuff, but I find the characters really interesting. I like the main cop a lot.
Yeah.
I'd almost be okay if it was just a history lesson about the weird things that go on in the stock market.
Yeah,
the most interesting part for me.
The first issue had a lot of this. That this issue, not so much. This issue really. So in the last issue, we got introduced to this world. We understand that there's this bank that is using some sort of symbol language or something like that, and they're manipulating the stock market and thus manipulating the world. And then a murder happens, and our protagonist, the cop, sees the symbols. And now when this issue picks up, it picks up with some of the fallout of that murder. And for me, the most compelling scene in the issue was when the cop visits a professor who is the only person who has...
Stop distracting us.
Josh, just because you didn't read the book.
Sorry.
He visits a...
professor,
a university professor who's written a book on these symbols. And the book was completely buried.
Yeah.
Like someone bought every copy that was printed.
And then they bought the publisher.
Yeah, they bought the publisher and then shut the publisher down. Like talk about power, right? So what it is is this wasn't a surprising move. I mean, it's the idea of like, okay, go find an eccentric expert, who's been beaten down and can warn you or whatever. But like that scene really like gives you a sense of a greater thing, a greater conspiracy in the world.
He can give you a lot of exposition too, but yeah. I like this exposition. I find all this, alternate history stuff really compelling. So this is my favorite scene of the issue.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I thought it was a really, really strong issue. Although it just ended, like, the cop goes to tell him, he's like, listen, I need your help. And the guy's like, no, I can't help you. And then they have a long conversation. Then the cop gets a phone call. He's like, all right, well, I've got to go. And the guy's like, well, be careful. We'll talk later. I'm like, oh, they're not going to talk later.
Yeah, so, but also, like, you really did a lot to find this guy. Yeah, you just got to leave right away. Yeah. I realized he left to go make an arrest. But
yeah,
still,
yeah,
And then we got some... sexy lady sex on the next page. But
yeah, well, hey, that happens.
See what you miss out, Josh, when you don't read the second
page. The sexy lady sex.
I've been trying to find that.
But the Coker art is really great.
Yep.
Even though the cop's face changes a little bit,
I just realized who he was because I knew that name. He's drawn a bunch of stuff, but he drew a miniseries written by Judd Winnick called Blood and Water. It was about vampires from Vertigo in the early 2000s that I really liked a lot.
He's been around, done a lot of stuff looking him up.
And while you're looking him up, the colorist, Mike Garland, I'll give him a lot of credit too because there's a lot of color setting the mood per scenes. This book so far has had several scenes that take place at sunset. And that has come across really nicely on the page. And also, like in the opening scene with the Berlin with the portal.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was very, very cool. Yeah, but the red lighting and all that sort of stuff, and it's just the whole team is gelling really together really nicely. And it's just kind of thing where like I just get lost in this book, and that's what I love.
Well, it's the benefit of having so many pages; you can really get into it.
Yeah.
Whenever I see like in a movie or anything like these skinny staircases, I get really nervous.
Yeah,
I feel like I would fall right off.
Yeah.
Tom Coker did Daredevil Noir. He's done a lot of like single issues here and there. An issue of Moon Knight. Like we've seen him around. He did the Blood and Water miniseries that Josh mentioned. He's a name I recognize and it's a style I recognize.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I've seen him on this kind of extended
run this kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, but it's great. And it's really, I like, intrigued by the world, and I feel like this pushed the story forward enough, but still, like you said, you're not quite sure what's going on. I think we're not supposed to know what's going on. I think that's by design.
And who doesn't love a conspiracy story about a secret group running the world?
Yeah,
I do.
Exactly. And
redacted documents. Right. I like redacted documents.
The mixed media and
less to read.
Exactly.
More redacted, the better.
Yeah. But having the scene breaks with the artifacts of that. Yeah. It's unlike anything else that's out there. And I like what, the way Hickman approaches this kind of stuff, where it's like, this is this unique thing that is unlike anything he does. It's unlike anything else that they're reading. And he's drawn you in. Now, that said, next issue or issue after, either start getting answers or have big revelations or something, sort of thing. But I'm there. I want to know what these symbols mean. I want to know where this is going. And it's nice because at the back of the book, there's the dramatis personae, which is nice to explain who they are. Would be good with faces, say that, but maybe in a future issue they'll do that. But yeah,
Dr. Tyler Gaddis, you're not alone for this world.
Yeah, sadly. Black Monday Murders, number two, your pick of the week this week.
I like it a lot. I didn't know what to make of it. Even though I missed the first one when it first came out because I was away, I saw you guys talking about it on our communication devices, and I was like, oh, geez. Because I knew how long it was, but I flew through them.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, I was in the comic shop this Wednesday, and I was talking to folks about it, and people were saying, like, oh, God, there's so much to read. I'm like, yeah. But honestly, $4.99, yeah, I think it's on the right side of that. Because if you look at what Marvel and DC are charging $4.99 for, yeah. And we're talking
20
about
20 pages.
Yeah, sometimes less. I feel like that's the right place to be with this. You know.
I'll never complain about good page count.
Yep.
Like if it's something I'm really enjoying, I'll read twice as much.
Yeah, and having 25 books plus vacation lag, that's your own fault.
I counted up, it was almost 50 books. Jesus. Equivalent of 50 books this week I had to read. I didn't read
all of them.
Fair warning, I didn't read them all. There's a couple of books on here we're talking about I didn't get the chance to read. I just didn't get a chance to. But let's talk about The Flash, which I did read. The Flash number 6. I read 4, 5, and 6 this week.
Okay.
And I missed a DiDomenico art.
Yep.
But he was back for 6. And kind of like with Aquaman last week when I said when Brad Walker's drawing it, it's a better book. When DiDomenico's drawing Flash, it's a better book, I think.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I guess reading that many in a row like that, the twist in this one must have come as a bit of a
twist.
Oh yeah, it did.
I mean, like meaning it was effective. It worked, and I felt that way for me.
Yeah,
there was a little bit in the beginning where I was like, "All right, they need to get on with it," and then they did.
Yeah,
and I thought, oh, we're gonna have to deal with it. This happened a few times this week. I did think one of the characters died or were presumed to have died in a couple of books, and I thought, oh no, I don't want the 6 issues of mourning.
Right,
but in this one.
They didn't really do that.
No.
I feel like there's a lot going on.
Well, he's not convinced she's dead.
Yeah.
Right.
The Flash, the Flash's girlfriend, Godspeed had been killing all the Speedsters. Flash's girlfriend was quote unquote killed last issue. I think it was last issue. It's hard to say. I read them all at once.
But it was more to say, I think the reveal in this one is that, oh shit.
It was one of those reveals where I felt dumb.
Yeah.
I was like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course it was. They weren't going to let him have a partner, just some random dude named whatever he was. Of course he's the villain.
Yeah. So.
But I didn't see it coming.
I didn't either.
It totally worked. I was happy with the issues and I was like, maybe I don't really like this all that much. And then I was like, all right, that was pretty good. that was all right. And like, it's got fallout. They have to deal with it. It wasn't like it just happened and now we're done with it.
I feel like once an issue, there's like a really hokey piece of dialogue.
Yeah.
Like in this one, it was when Wally 2.0 walks in on Barry and Iris talking, and he goes, "Stop coming here to hit on my aunt." And I was like, well, that came out of nowhere. But other than that.
Yeah, that's dialogue is not always Williamson's strong point. His strong point is the plotting, I think.
And the plot's been great.
Yeah, no, and you can see that the plotting and the character interaction, which is like through this and in Birthright and in whichever. But he made you feel it. And DiDomenico.
He's really, really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He is really good, but also he's doing a lot of great facial acting.
Yep.
Like making Barry look pained and making I don't know what the other dude, Godspeed's, look...
August.
Yeah, disaffected by it.
Yeah, he doesn't...
You poor fool.
This is a great panel here where he's...
Yeah, this is actually...
Where he's revealing himself to Barry, and like you said, he's not very upset about what's happening.
It's Ozymandias like.
Yeah,
I guess that's sort of what it sort of feels like. I did it 35 minutes ago. What are you stupid?
First of all, he does a great haggard Barry, and I think it's even better that Barry's kind of he's fraying at the edges. You know, he's coming apart. Not only because all the Speedsters were just killed, but just in general, this whole series has been about him not really having his life in control. So for a character like The Flash, it's interesting to see that.
That part stresses me.
He doesn't have enough time. Even a guy who can run super fast and do everything, he doesn't have enough time to do everything.
Right. Well, he's trying to do too many things.
Right.
I can tell you that, Barry. It's not...
One of the things I really miss when DiDomenico's not drawing is the way they make the lightning look like crackle, not just lines on his suit.
Yeah. And the lightning crackle accentuates the tension of the scene. Like it's done really, really well in terms of supporting the visual language.
We're going to talk about some more DC books this week, but... There's a whole real solid mid-range of like Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern happening right now, which we didn't have for the last 5 years.
Right, yeah, they've been...
So that's... I'm really happy.
I just want to call out the panel where it's actually Barry imagining what happened to Mina.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's like, I've seen this before because there's suits there. Yep. And even the panel layout evokes what they're talking about when, Barry wastes away to a skeleton.
And that's a great shot of Barry. And I also really like what they're doing here with the... Gray dialogue where they're like whispering. Mm-hmm. I've not seen that before in comics.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
It really does work. And this was a great scene. I think this would have been a better scene if he didn't know what he was remembering. If they did, you know what I mean?
Like, just had like an echo, right? Yeah.
The only thing that doesn't work in DC right now is that it all happened. But if this isn't like, he can't figure out why he thinks she's not dead, yeah. Like, that would be a much more profound scene, I think.
Also, he uses a loop line from Empire Strikes Back, so that's nice.
Nice.
Spider-Man number 8.
So Spider-Man number 8, a lot going on in this issue, and I was just somewhat, this book, I enjoyed it and then was frustrated about it and then enjoyed it because the first half of the book is Miles being confronted by Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
Yeah.
After Miles' grandmother hired Jessica to find out Miles' secret. And they're basically just like, yeah, we know who you are. It took 5 seconds. You're not, you know, like you're being reckless. So it's very much, there was a lot of that like real talk, but it also very much made me remember how great Bendis is at writing Luke Cage and Jessica Jones together.
This is a classic Bendis, like three characters
in a room,
on a roof in this. This is the wrong issue I'm looking at. scene, and he writes those characters really well, so it was a really great scene.
Yeah, and it made me realize how much I missed him writing those two characters.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden got me excited for the upcoming Jessica Jones book that he's gonna, you know, like, you know, it's hit, Ben is doing those characters that he does so well.
Yeah.
But then it got frustrating because, you know, then that whole scene happens and Miles goes, okay, well, Tony called me, I gotta see what's going on with the Avengers. And it's when they're about to leave for the Hulk. Yeah. So that's what I was like, God, this is so behind. But then as I read the book, it fast forwarded through all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and moved very, very quickly. And then you've got,
it's
still months ago behind, but they're in the Quinjet after it all happened. And you get, and I like what the pairing of young Nova, young Spider-Man, young Ms. Marvel, the kids at the university of the Avengers, exactly. And them slowly realizing that they are siding with Tony and that maybe this is, you know, what's going on is wrong. So a little unbalanced in terms of an issue, like, cause it's trying to get across the crossover needs, but at the same time,
chopping a lot of wood,
exactly. But at the end of the day, it was when Bendis is good and doing what he does well.
Great,
and
Nico Leon too.
You liked it?
Yeah, I did like it. I thought it worked really well. I liked how he drew the adults as opposed to the kids. Like when you see Miles and Sam together, I thought that looked really good. And
I like how they're all tiny.
Yeah, it's a good visual indicator. And I thought, well, you know what? For years, people have been saying there's nothing for kids to read,
right?
Or not kids, but young people, you know, like, and you've got a good cadre of characters now that you could give to young kids who not young, but, you know.
The youth.
Yeah, the youths.
The youths.
The youths.
You know, if you want to read superheroes, this is a good place to start.
Right.
This first scene was really great.
If the whole issue was Miles, Luke, and Jessica, that would have been a blast. It would have been a blast, and it was, you know. And it had that Bendis, Sorky, and, you know, kind of rhythm to the dialogue and
Jessica and Luke were great together. They had a great back and forth.
And it's funny because it's really interesting, especially now in light of with the successful Jessica Jones TV show and the upcoming Luke Cage TV show, is that we had a golden age with these characters where they were doing stuff, and then they just kind of stopped.
They went away. Yeah.
They stopped using both of them, really. You know, like, and now it's nice to see them kind of coming back.
I would argue that for a while, Luke Cage is one of the more important characters in Marvel.
Yeah,
he was the leader of the Avengers for a while.
Yes, yeah, so for that that whole Bendis Avengers period, he was probably the most important character in the team. And then they just stopped using
him. Yeah, very weird, very strange. But it's nice to see him back. It's got me excited for what's coming. It's also got me excited for Civil War to just please end.
I am enjoying the central story, but it's so lopsided here.
Yes.
There's not a lot of tension in that.
Yeah.
If you look at the way that the faces are drawn throughout that whole Carol-Tony meeting, it's great. There's like a whole panel of like faces, shocked. And as you keep going through it, there's just people reacting all over with these big sort of cartoony faces, which works really well as a way to break up what would be a really boring thing to draw.
Right.
Because it's basically Tony and Carol explaining everything that we already know because we read it months ago. And I actually, for a second, I thought, oh, maybe they've decided to stop fighting and come together. Like, if this is now, like, oh, they're getting along and they've decided. I thought that'd be a fun twist on Civil War II, that it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Civil War II.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we decided this was stupid, so we're going to come together and fight the actual threat. I was like, why didn't they do that?
What is the actual threat?
Who cares?
There isn't
as long
one.
As it's not them.
There isn't one to fight.
Come up with one. It's not, you know.
Everyone, Civil War II, everyone beats on Ulysses.
Yeah, hopefully.
You did this. And he's like, I should have seen that coming. Scene.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Oh, stupid Inhumans. just so we're not talking about it this week, but they were crowbarred into all new X-Men, the Dennis Hopeless book. Like they're doing this great thing with Iceman or whatever, and then all of a sudden the Inhumans show up, and it's like enough, just awful.
We're the new hotness on the block, Ron.
Yeah. Anyway,
Black Science
number 24 picks up where we left off, where Grant is in the clutches of this witch. Who says, I will give you, I will trade you for what you came here for if you give me all your secrets, the secrets to Black Science. And so in order to help his daughter, he goes along with it. And there was one, the opening pages, the narration boxes really got me because, where Grant is thinking to himself and he's saying how, you know, we label ourselves, we identify one thing that we do above all, but what happens when you lose that? Mm. And then one line where he says, how does an artist go on without arms? Which I think was a real, like, okay, wow, this is a great
paints with his mouth.
Yeah, maybe.
There are.
I know there is. But it's a great situation to put Grant in.
It's and interesting. Then, I don't know how they're going to get him out of it. That's what's great about it. Yeah. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, and then what's funny is to see how it manifests itself. Where so they do the thing with the witch, they get the heart, and his daughter delivers the heart to the townspeople, and then she agrees to go back with him, and he's going to bring her back to her mother. And he's on the ship, and he's just stupid. It's just, he's like,
on a calculated trajectory.
He's like, just do the thing. We know what we did, right? and you could tell, like, he almost got a Flowers for Algernon kind of feeling, you know, right? Where he knows what they need to do, but he doesn't know how to do it, you know, and he's just kind of leaning on the ship to help him. And then what I thought was great was so they go back to Earth. And they park the ship and then they walk and he tells her she's got to go see her mother, but he's not going to go because he's afraid to face his wife or his ex-wife or whatever. And then the book comes back and revisits the organization that originally hired him to do what he did, which is something that I feel is great as the dimension spanning stuff has been.
We haven't dealt with this at all.
We haven't dealt with that.
We're back in the real world.
Exactly.
And he's average intelligence. It must be fun to write dumb Grant.
Yeah.
But I was like, it took me a second to realize, because I was like, is this an alternate, whatever? And I was like, oh, this is just where we started. And it's just the real world, and there's no...
It's all fucked up.
It's very fucked up. But that's, I mean...
Because it turns out the bad guy is his boss.
Yeah.
Not so much the guy who was on the ship with them.
Yeah.
Although, that guy also.
True, but he's more like a henchman.
Right. Yeah.
I like seeing Kadir again, though. That's what, I mean, all these relationships to come... You know, you thought that they were all done, but now we're back in it again. And then to see the overarching villain and the consequences of what has happened, you know, so it's like, oh great, this is a great direction to take this.
Sometimes I lose track of who's alive and who's dead, and I figure out what the hell, there's like 20 of them running.
Yeah, exactly, because there's so many alternate dimensions.
I also enjoy how Grant's nose is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
As the more issues that go along.
Mateo does like the pointy nose.
The long pointy nose.
Yeah. Someone needs to call Mateo's parents and figure out why they didn't tell him to knock that out.
Oh. Just stop it.
You know what? This is going to be a big problem for you someday. You need to stop it now. But they didn't nip it in the bud.
Yep.
It's all their fault. I took a flyer on Hadrian's Wall, number one, this week from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins, who has written a lot of things we've read before.
Yep.
The last thing he wrote was that Cowl book. Yeah. And Alex Siegel, art by Rod Rice. And on the cover and the first couple pages say it's going to be a sci-fi story, so I read it expecting some sort of twist.
Yeah.
Like there'd be a demon, because that seems to be the MO.
Yep.
But there was no twist. It was a pure sci-fi book.
Sci-fi crime, right?
Sci-fi crime. So basically there's an astronaut who is ends up dead. Well, he's not an astronaut, but he's a crew member of Hadrian's Wall, which is a ship, and he ends up dead, and so they have to send an investigator up to investigate it, and he is the ex-husband of a woman on the ship who's either like a captain or a high-level person on the ship, and her current husband's on the ship too, and there's a lot of intrigue.
He's the one who died.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's the one who died.
Yeah.
You're right.
So what happens is that you have this investigator who lost his wife, broke up with his wife, and she shacked up with this space guy, and now
dead.
The space guy is dead.
Right.
So you got that. And so now she's pissed that he's investigating. You know, like, there's bias all around.
And there's a lot of secrets going on.
This is like a TV pitch.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
That's most comics probably. But there's a lot of, everyone's got secrets. Someone dumps this guy, the main character's medicine in the sink at the end of the issue. There's a lot going on here. I was intrigued. I really liked the art a lot.
Yeah, mess with a man's medicine. This is the team that did Cal.
Yeah, I like the
Art of
Cowell.
The Art of Cowell was really, really, really interesting, really well. It's neat to see them take on a completely different
thematic. I liked Cowell's, the idea of Cowell more than the execution.
Yeah.
I actually really like the execution of this issue, so I'm definitely going to read on.
It's good science fiction.
It's really solid science fiction.
Expansy.
Kind of
expansy. A little expansy.
Who's going to do the Expanse comic book?
I'm surprised there isn't one yet. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk briefly to the people out there in podcast land how you can help iFanboy. Go to iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can find many things. Number one, you can find the Amazon link. That's where you can go. Click on that link. It's not so much a link, it's a big banner. Click on that, and you can...
It's technically a link.
True, but...
We have the best links.
We've got the most tremendous, beautiful links.
A lot of links are just some words. We have a large picture.
A lot of people are talking about our links, about how nice they are, how much they appreciate those links.
Pretty soon, we're going to release some good information about our links.
Boy, these jokes...
It's going to be unbelievable.
These jokes are going to really hurt in 2 months. So...
keep doing it.
You can click... I'll make all your purchases there. We get little pieces of your sale. Nothing comes out of your pocket. Comes out of Amazon's pocket, and that helps us keep things going here. You can also become an iFanboy patron, patreon.com/iFanboy. We have so many wonderful patrons. The response has been overwhelming, and there's many different levels. We've hit 3 reward levels, I believe. We're going to be doing our first patron-only hangout at the end of this month, so if you're a patron, look forward to that information. Stay tuned. And, you know, you get your superpower, which you get to the end of it. There's a lot of great things going on at patreon.com/iFanboy. You can vote.
And also important, you can vote on a book that comes out each week. But all patrons who are getting rewards will start being mailed out this month. So
we finally got them in from the manufacturer, and we're going to start mailing them out. And as we just mentioned, you can vote on a book to be included in the show every week. So a lot of great, fun things happening with our patrons. Go to patreon.com/iFanboy. Finally, if you just want to donate some cash, you can do that at iFanboy.com/support. You don't want to become a patron. You don't want to purchase via Amazon. You can just
donate via PayPal.
Cash our way.
Yeah, it works that way.
Thanks to everyone who does all that stuff. And why is Suicide Squad number 2 on this list?
Wait. You didn't put it on
here.
No, I did.
I didn't even read it.
What the hell?
I did because it's like a train wreck. I just can't stop looking. No, I saw some stuff online. I saw some comments about how it was good or whatever. You know, I'm like, all right, well, let me check this out. And that's when I realized. So this is, of course, Suicide Squad. You know, the big summer movie, summer blockbuster. And this is
$700 million.
Written by Rob Williams, who we like, right? We think Rob Williams is great.
Yes.
With art by Jim Lee, ink by Scott Williams. So normally that's a big thing you look at. And I read the book, and I was like, wow, that's. That seemed awfully brief, and I realized that Jim Lee drew 13 pages.
Who drew the other pages?
Then the rest is a 8-page backup story about Boomerang.
Oh.
Right?
That counts. If it's original, still like, I mean...
The comic
but not drawn by Jim Lee, though, the backup.
Right, but that's not.
It's also not the story. It's a side story.
Right. It says nothing... And...
But is this team who do the backup story they credit on the cover?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I mean, it's a full-size comic.
All comics used to be this.
No, but they were longer. They were regular size plus the back.
Oh, yeah, they are credited on the cover.
Like, the first feature in, an old Flash comic was shorter.
Well, the old comics were told short stories. They told, 5 short pages.
I know that.
So it's different. We're talking about modern comics.
Yeah.
But they can get away with it because of that.
I don't know. I think that's a stretch. I think if you're doing a Jim Lee comic and you can't even do 20 pages, then, that's...
Okay, all right.
You know, and on top of that... There were several pages where, that's clearly Jim Lee. Like, it's Jim Lee that we know and whatever. But there was a couple panels where
Like the first issue where it just doesn't look like Jim Lee
at all. It doesn't look like Jim Lee at all. It looks like, yeah.
2 things.
Yeah.
You read a Suicide Squad comic. It doesn't matter what
You've
it is.
You've only brought this on yourself.
Yeah, no.
It doesn't matter what you're complaining about.
Yeah.
It's not like you didn't know it was coming. B, complaining that Jim Lee isn't drawing enough or fast. I mean.
Well, look, I have a scenario for you. So would you rather have this where he does 13 pages – and there's a backup, and he does it every month? Or would you rather him do 3 issues and then be done?
3 issues and be done.
Really?
Yeah, I'd rather have it contained.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah. And the other big note is that they killed Captain Boomerang.
I'm sure they did.
Again?
Again?
It's just smoldering boots.
Oh, shit.
That's
kind of awful.
And
everyone falls over.
I will give him credit. Captain Boomerang impulsively, approaches some alien thing that they don't know what it is. It's a Phantom Zone thing.
So he was an atheist then?
He gets blasted. And then you just see his boots, and then you get a bunch of reaction shots, and then one boot falls over.
that's a nice sequence.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sequence.
Also, it should be noted that the reaction shots are sort of bland.
Look at Deadshot.
I know.
Deadshot is just that horrible.
Deadshot's metal face. That eye is not in the right place.
No, it is not.
It's like next to his ear.
Yeah. Everything about Deadshot is wrong.
In this. Yeah.
Anyway. So, it, I don't know. It's the whole Suicide Train wreck keeps...
Are you going to keep reading it?
I think he is.
We'll see.
You, no, that is... I know what that means.
All right. So, Detective Comics 940. Caveat, I have not read this because I have 3 issues behind.
Oh.
Go ahead. It's fine.
I don't want to ruin this for you.
Okay.
Leave the room, Connor. You got to leave the room.
No. Yeah. So there's a... Okay. I really
wanted to get to it, but I really
wanted you to go... I'm going to have to ruin it for
that's
you.
Fine,
there's
that's
no
fine.
Way to...
That's fine.
They make you believe that they killed Tim for about half of the issue.
Okay.
Oh, this is what everybody was all... And everybody was getting all up in arms about.
Were they?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the end, it was like they didn't. And I just thought, thank God. I thought again, I was like, I've done this story with Batman numerous times where Robin gets killed
right. And
you have to go through it. And then by the end, he's in a room. So even if Batman has to get through with it, then we know. But I also thought.
We know the truth.
I also thought, ballsy. Like, because they had to go down and it was a blaze of glory. If you remember at the end of the last issue, there were all these drones coming in and they were all going to go fight them. And then they realized that Tim had rewired them so they were coming straight at him. And he's like, I got this. Either literally or metaphorically. I don't think he actually said it. But it was that situation. And I don't know why that happened, to be honest with you. Because like, I'll take care of this. I got to go to college in a month. So
weird reason.
I know, but that's kind of what it was framed as. And he left a note, which is weird.
So he's suicided.
And then, like, at the end, he's in a room. He's like, you have to let me out. And we don't know who's got him in there. And
We need a Robin calling.
So on the one hand, I thought, all right, if you're going to kill some off, just do it and kill some off. On the other hand, we're just doing the fake thing. But at least they did it at one time. They didn't kill him and then bring him back in 6 months, which would have been horrible.
Right.
So that was a good choice of a choice that I'm not sure is a good adventure.
The detective's been good.
Yeah.
All-Star Batman number 2. So I wasn't around for the first issue, and I haven't listened to that show yet because I just read the first issue about 10 minutes before we started the show. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, but this is like a...
It was pick of the week.
That's right. It was pick of the week. I know that they keep saying this is in continuity and Duke's in it and all that stuff, but I mean, it doesn't feel like... It feels like a mishmash
it
of...
It doesn't,
of
and that's Frank, why I liked it. It
feels like the Frank Miller All-Star Batman like dialed down 10 notches.
Yeah.
And it's like it's Gonzo, like almost... Pulp Fiction-esque sort of adventure story.
And just a very different side of Scott Snyder Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what I liked about it.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing that other side for a long time. And the Romita Jr. art really does lend a different flavor than...
This is some good Romita.
Yeah, it's done properly for him. You know, like a lot of times you get stuff and I don't think it's the right fit for him.
Right.
This is totally right. There was a really interesting take on... What Two-Face is and how he operates,
right.
Which will, you know,
shared mind.
Sorry. Yeah, which will go the way of the dodo sometime, and that's fine. But for this, I think it totally works. Yeah, I liked it.
This is a much more brutal Batman. He's got his cowl ears are nines, which I was trying to figure out how that worked. But I guess it just does. And I love that he's just sort of plowing through all of these villains on this road trip. Villains you haven't seen forever. And also, as a younger reader in the 80s, the KG Beast, who's just called the Beast here, was one of my favorite villains because it was...
Yeah, and they set him up very nicely. He killed somebody, didn't he?
I'm sure he did.
No, like he killed like one of the main characters one time when one of the main characters died. I don't remember.
Could be.
No, maybe it was he got killed.
Like someone, died somewhere.
One of the big stories started with the KG Beast dying, I think.
The KG Beast and the NKV Demon were my two of my favorite.
I'm going to keep calling him the KG Beast.
Because that's a much better name than the Beast. The KG Beast is great. I really enjoy this. It's so gonzo. It's so like I can see it. As a film, like with the little character introductions, like popping on screen with the music sting,
the title cards,
it's I didn't know what to expect because they kept saying no, this isn't continuity, but they have to say that to get people to buy it because people are stupid and won't buy it unless it is, and it doesn't seem like it is at all. So that's totally fine with me. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, number 4, and Green Lantern is number 6. I'm really liking both of these books.
Yeah,
I haven't really read Green Lantern in forever, and I like the Green Lanterns book because I like those two characters. But I'm really liking the Hal Jordan book because that feels the most like a Green Lantern book that I've been missing.
Yep.
Despite the fact that it's all about Sinestro and the Yellow Corps, that's fine, whatever. They're still out in space.
Well, and the cliffhanger is that now the Green Lantern Corps is going for them. But I thought you wanted to talk about this because there's about five pages of Guy Gardner just naked talking to Sinestro.
It's like it's like Austin Powers. They keep putting an object in front of him.
At one point when he puts the bag of beers in front of because the whole premise is that, you know, Guy Gardner has gone to save Hal.
He's going on a recon mission. Yeah.
And he ends up on the Fear Planet, and they drain his ring, and so he's got zero power.
So his suit goes away.
And so his suit, you know, disintegrates. So I'm like, you could have left the suit on. It's like,
well, the suit's from the ring.
Yeah, I know.
And Sinestro's like, why aren't you wearing clothes? Like, you tell me you're wearing underwear in that suit?
Yeah.
I like this issue a lot. This book's been really good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's good.
I'm really happy about the second tier characters right now, DC.
Yeah.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about. Let's talk about the Patron's Choice book.
The Runaway Choice.
As we mentioned just a few minutes ago, the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy vote every week to put a book into the show. I always hope it's going to be something really weird that we're not going to read, but so we're going to run a book that we were going to talk about anyway.
Yeah.
Doom Patrol, number one, the first from Young Animal, the Vertigo imprint that is being run by
Gerard Way.
Gerard Way.
Yep.
Coincidentally written by Gerard Way.
Written by Gerard Way. Gerard Way, huge Grant Morrison disciple, we know that from the past.
Grant and I mean, if you're a fan of Peter Milligan, you would love this book because this is very Peter Milligan-y in story style. And
it was weird.
It was very weird.
I really liked bits of it.
Yeah,
I really liked the EMT characters together.
Yeah,
I thought they were fun. I obviously don't have much of a sense of what's happening. I don't think you're supposed to.
Right,
but the art was great.
Yeah.
Nick Darrington.
Nick Darrington is the artist on this. I thought this was really, really good. I was really excited. I'm really excited about this whole imprint just because I like, you know, the idea of something different going on. And this is probably the closest to Vertigo-y, you know, that, you know, like the whole of what the original Vertigo mission was all those years ago, which is take stuff that already existed in DC Universe and do it.
Weird.
And yeah, adult. Do it out of continuity and weird, or not in superhero continuity. Mm-hmm. And this definitely, you know, is of that idea. Really clear that this is being written for the trade, though.
Yeah.
Because I just...
There wasn't enough.
Because I thought it's one of those, like, when you get your stack of books, I'm like, oh, this could be a pick of the week contender because I like Gerard's work. I love the idea. I love the energy behind it. But this one issue just lacked that thing for me to grab onto.
Yeah.
To make it great. And not that it's not great, but it's the first chapter. And I imagine that this whole, you know, when the first five or six issues go in a trade will read really well because it's clear that it's writing for the trade.
I feel like that'll come when the team comes together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now they're separate. My favorite bit though was, so the two EMT characters are taking a break and the older one tells the younger girl that she should meet his son because his son is weird and she's weird and they get along.
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to talk about how there's people living in this hero. So it's like, who's the weird one?
Yep.
I think it's you describing the civilization inside your food.
Well, I thought it was weird because he was using it as a metaphor, like, you know.
I get it, but it's like it was just like
you're the weird one. But I thought what was interesting was that he's using the idea of what if in this Giro there's a whole universe and people living whatever, and then there actually was.
Right.
That's what I found even weirder. It was like, wow, he nailed it. It's like, so.
And I love the art style change when it went into. Yeah. I mean that sort of color pencil.
Yeah.
Thing is really great.
Yeah, and so Robot Man or whatever his name, he's been living in the Giro, which is just, you know, odd, and he bursts out of it, and that's how they find him. I love those single page about what's going on with Miles Calder. And he's sitting outside making music, apparently.
It was just so weird.
It was that was a great page. But yeah, this is fun. I can't wait to read more of it.
This had that vibe and energy to it. That was good. You're right. I wish it was twice as long, but
yeah, either twice as long or I needed something at the end. You know, like it's just too preliminary for me to have made it pick of the week. But I'm glad it's a good start. So
I'm looking forward to more.
Josh has got a dismissive face.
I like the cover.
the cover was cool because you peel that back actually and on the paper version and you see the
And it seemed like there wasn't anything really. It was weird. And I don't like things that are weird for the sake of being weird without an underpinning.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that underpinning was. I like Robot Man though.
Robot Man's great design. Great.
He's a great character. So let's quickly look at the I We Got This report.
So yeah, so there was just one. There was only one really big offender that I wanted to mention in terms of the I Got This. And I realized that when Civil War Amazing Spider-Man number 3 came out, it was an offender. And here we are again with issue number 4,
Double offender.
Not only the possibly the most egregious, to the point where I want to stop doing this after this one. Yeah. Because like I think we
this
made
one,
our,
this one solves the equation. It ends it.
I think this is where it's like, listen, we're not going to win against this war. We're aware of it. I think we're all noticed it.
This is a war of attrition.
Yeah, but so the main point of this whole miniseries kind of wraps up with the fight between Spider-Man and the Sonic guy or whatever, and then Spider-Man's talking to Carol Danvers and basically pledging his allegiance to her side of the Civil War thing, and then they go to leave and they jump off the helicarrier, and Spider-Man, who is webbed to Carol's arm, which I always found kind of odd, he says, "We got this, right?" And Carol says, "We got this." It was a whole conversation spoken in "We got this."
You know what? I didn't even listen to what you're saying because I'm just staring at that stupid fucking glowing blue spider on his chest, which I haven't seen in weeks.
You know what? I like the art in this. Who's the artist?
Charles Foreman. The art has been great in this whole series. This whole series, Christopher Gage wrote it, so he's the main offender, but Charles Foreman on the art side has been fantastic. I mean, the coloring is not...
Did she go in a chimney? Why is her face ashy?
I don't know.
It's probably the light from that stupid logo on his chest.
Yeah. But anyway, so...
I was like, you were talking, and I was just looking at it, and I was like, why do I hate that?
Oh, that's why. He exaggerated the spider more than other people, too, by the way. But yeah, single panel, entire conversation spoken, and we got this. Awesome. We got this, right?
We might need to retire now.
I think so. I think we at least we've made our point.
So you're saying they win. That's what I'm hearing.
Was there any ever doubt they would win? So those are the books that came out this week. If you go to fanboy.com, you can talk about those books or other books that came out this week. There was a lot of books.
It was a big week. Yeah.
So let's do a couple audience questions. Does Josh know about this first one?
No.
Okay, good.
First question comes from Grant from Loves Park, Illinois. And he says, I've been listening to your earliest episodes after you announced last week that they're back on the iTunes feed. And on one of the really early ones, you guys are talking about how TV shows lose their appeal if they're based on a romantic will they or won't they dynamic. And the two characters in question get together. But Josh said, well, they did it best on... And Ron cut him off. It's been driving me crazy because I want to know what show Josh feels the will they won't they theme... did best. In my fanboy time, I've been thinking about this since late 2005. In real time, it's been a couple of days. But what is real time, really? I don't expect Josh to remember exactly what he was thinking, but my question is, what show do you guys think had the best will they, won't they romantic theme?
I wish this was video so everyone could see Josh's face right now.
Okay, first of all, that 2005, Josh, he's dead. So we don't know what he thinks. He's gone.
First of all, I don't remember this.
Well, yeah,
at all.
It was 11 years ago. On a side note, we have actually been hearing from a lot of people who have been going back in the feed once we announced last week that the shows are all back.
Yep.
And they're discovering our early episodes and how terrible they were. So that's been fun to see. But Josh, what were you talking about then?
Cheers.
Cheers.
I mean, that was my first instinct.
Is it?
Like, that was every sitcom in the 80s, though, wasn't it?
A little bit.
For the most part. Cheers is the one that I think would have been...
Yeah.
Like Moonlighting.
Moonlighting is the one that ruined it. Because they did it so well, and then they went too far.
Right.
They got together, and then the show...
Well, whenever they get
chemistry
together.
Chemistry went away.
Yeah.
Cheers, at least,
Cheers
you had Diane
one.
Go away.
Yeah.
And so that's like, well, I guess we closed the book on that, but it wasn't the way that you wanted.
I thought you were going to say Friends.
I never watched Friends. Oh.
I like the idea of people listening and asking us questions about shows from 11 years ago.
Those are fun. Those are fun.
I have no memory of this.
Yeah, no memory at all. And I was trying to think, what would you... It's got to be Cheers. I think it's Cheers.
What else would there be?
Yeah.
It would have been The Office at the time. Would have been
2005.
I mean, The Office was on, but
Office,
I don't think it
UK,
did.
Very good.
Well, they weren't.
That was
that could have been that.
But they ended it after they did.
Yeah.
And that was key. Because you don't want to watch them after that.
Right, yeah.
Like
we
American,
saw the American Office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was bad, but it was different. It wasn't bad, but it was different.
Yeah.
It's less memorable.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say it was Cheers.
All right,
Josh. If anyone else has any questions for Josh about what he said 10 years ago, please write us at contact@ifanboy.com. Scott from Chicago, Illinois. This is a double Illinois email segment.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Is it possible to outgrow a character? Since I got into comics as a youngling, I tell anyone who would listen, Spider-Man is my favorite comic character, despite the fact that you didn't give him a hyphen.
Oh my god.
I'm going to...
It's wrong in two ways, at least, right here.
Still would today if pushed. But here's the rub. I haven't read a non-Ultimate Spider-Man book in years. Whenever I try, I find him grating. Grow up and accept your faults, you immature garbage bag! Have you grown out of your favorites? Will there ever come a day when Josh can't read Preacher? Ron can't read X-Men? Connor says Batman no more?
Well, I got the easy one on that because there's not going to be more Preacher. So, but there is a day where Josh can't watch the Preacher TV show. So
I guess maybe he means you go back and read it and realize you don't relate to or connect to them anymore.
Those are two different things, though, because he hasn't read a Spider-Man comic in years. He said he wants him to grow up and get over or whatever. So right. It sounds like – so there's like
– he has grown up in the Spider-Man. He's running a company.
Yeah.
He's got a glowy blue thing.
I mean, that's the I understand why you don't read Spider-Man.
In fact, I would think you would have a bigger problem with the Ultimate Spider-Man, who's the younger one. But he doesn't.
I don't know. Very good.
Yeah.
But I get what he's saying. So I recall us, by the end of Scott Pilgrim, really hating Scott.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there superhero... Because
he wasn't mature and dumb.
Are there like, ongoing superhero characters who you used to really like, and now whenever you see them, or now you're just not excited about them showing up, but you used to be a big fan?
Wonder Man.
They haven't really changed him, though.
Yeah, they have.
When he shows up, you're like, I don't even know what this is.
Yeah, yeah.
If
yeah.
there are, it would be not because I've outgrown them, it's because they've changed them.
Right, I was going to say, because he says, Scott asks, you know, is there a point where Ron can't read the X-Men?
Yes.
Yes, but right not now. Because of the characters. Yeah, it's because of the writers and the editors. It's not because of the characters.
But that is the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's how they are.
They are the men behind the curtain.
Manifested.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I don't read Green Lantern anymore.
I don't know that there's any character that we would... superhero character we would say we don't relate to anymore unless they have changed them. If they're still the original thing we liked about them, I don't think there's anybody we would
dislike. I think there are versions of them that we like, though, and then those versions shift and change. But so let me ask you this, then. Yeah. You know Batman is a very malleable character. Yep. He can exist in all sorts of forms.
Right.
Are there versions of it that you don't really get into that, you know, like All-Star Batman, that kind of thing? Or are you kind of like all-comers?
I'm sure there is. I didn't really love the original All-Star, the Frank Miller's
version. Well, yeah.
So that would probably be a version of it.
Yeah.
Like a mean, well, I guess Batman's mean. Like a over-the-top, he was over-the-top mean.
Right. You know,
Batman is mean at its sort of always, but he was just like a jerk.
Yeah. Well, what about you and Hawkeye?
Yeah.
But they changed Hawkeye.
Yeah, but in the same
if
way.
If you went back now and read West Coast Avengers, would you still like Hawkeye?
It'd be fun. Yeah, I like it. It would make me more mad about how he is now. And like, even so, even when like the Fraction and Aja Hawkeye was going on, and we were enjoying it, and it was this is good. I was still thinking, I was like, well, that's not the character.
Not
I like
my Clint.
It's a different. It's
hashtag not my Clint.
It's got the same name, but other than that, it's a purple person.
He's a pod person.
Yeah, in a way.
Came back and he went.
Yeah, but that seems to be more like if they're trying to find something to do with the character. And invent a reason for them to be because no one else cares. Which, you know, that happens. I mean, the Inhumans are kind of like that.
Yeah.
I used to love the Inhumans.
Yeah, now they're annoying.
Yeah. I mean, because they changed what it was that was cool about them. Is that they were a background. They were underground.
I'm trying to reconcile, because I do enjoy the Charles Soule book. The main one, not Uncanny. Inhumans, not the all-new ones.
Right.
But you're right. They were more special when they were just something that would show up every now and then.
Yeah, and they were like super powerful, but like in the background. And their family, that was solid. It was Medusa and Black Bolt, and now that's all ripped asunder. And there's a whole. They're out in the open. They've got the island in the harbor. He's got a club in Grand Central.
The cloud.
Yeah, everything's an Inhuman was special.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I was actually thinking that earlier when you were talking about them, and I thought, I used to really, like, look forward to seeing the Inhumans metered out nicely as opposed to being the center of everything.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Scott from Chicago, Illinois. If you have a question or a comment, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can send us an audio clip. Keep it around 30 seconds. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and thank you for doing so.
And how long you thought about it.
How long you thought about it. Also important.
Yep.
So now we get to the point where we thank our patrons by giving them we've been doing this every week for the last couple of weeks. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you become a member at a certain level or patron at a certain level.
Yep.
You get to have your very own dumb/awesome, depending on your point of view, superpower. And so this week we start with Ron.
All right. So we want to thank patron Lucas Barwald for supporting ifanboy. And Lucas's power is color matching.
That looks good.
I mean, like, you know how when you see in a magazine, you like that color blue and you want to paint it on your wall, and you can never quite get it. He's like, oh, no, that's Pantone number.
Yeah, he knows the numbers.
He talks Pantone.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Color matching.
Can he also switch that to digital?
Yeah, no, he knows the hex numbers. Okay. Any RGB values, whatever it is. He sees color. He sees the numbers behind the color.
I got a job for that guy.
You can imagine.
Can he switch to CMYK just like that?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that's all just another language. Yeah, it's a visual to number language he's always been able to. He doesn't know how it happened.
But also on a practical level, say you're out shopping for clothes and you just go, should I get this? He goes, you gotta get that one.
Right, no, exactly. He knows what colors go together.
How they work.
And all how they work, with complementary and all that sort of thing. Yeah,
you know that Jordy Belair actually has that.
Possibly. So there you go. Lucas is color matching.
That's nice. Yeah. Ian Matthew Spillane. You know when you have a Band-Aid and you go do something, and you have to wash the dishes, and then that Band-Aid won't stick?
Mm.
He can make them stick again.
Oh.
He keeps a Band-Aid.
That's very useful.
Does it only work on Band-Aids?
No, it looks like adhesive. So if you've got a piece of tape and you have to pull it off for a second and then put it back on, but it got dust on there and doesn't, so then you got to start all over.
So he re-energizes adhesive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right,
but only for Band-Aids.
No,
he
for
can,
tape
he can do,
or...
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's less exciting.
Yeah.
Well, it's less exciting, but more utilitarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's useful. Certainly keep him around, especially after the battles, but... Uh-huh. You know, less interesting.
It's just like he can make a roll of tape last a lot longer. It's an
economic, you only need the one roll.
It's an economic benefit. Well, there's different types. There's your duct.
Sure.
There's your packing.
Right.
But you only need
that you're packing up a package, right?
Yeah.
And you go to and you have to reposition it, and it pulls all the cardboard.
Oh,
you start all over.
Yeah.
Not a problem for Ian.
He's got this.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
All right. So Alex Ferrer, thank you very much. Alex's power is that he knows every member of G.I. Joe and their real names.
Is that a power?
Yes.
Or is there just there?
He's never actually seen or read G.I. Joe.
He just has this knowledge of it.
He just knows.
Here, I'm going to hit you with something. Tell me if this is right.
Yeah.
Conrad Hauser.
Duke. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He knows him. He's never seen an episode. Doesn't know
he
why.
Doesn't know why.
It's one day. He
haunts him.
Yeah. He's like, shipwreck.
We're looking at you waiting for
I don't
this
know
issue.
What you're
Jack Nicholson.
There's no good place to find this. I was trying to find it really quick with my phone. But Alex is very useful if you ever want to talk about G.I. Joe. But only that.
He doesn't know anything about it, so he's just there as a resource. Sort of a verbal human Wikipedia.
Yeah,
or Joepedia.
It's going to – something really bad.
That's his code name.
It's Joepedia.
Yeah.
Something really bad is going to happen to get him on the X-Men. Like, he's way down on the chart.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He's like – you know what? He's below Band-Aid guy.
Yeah.
And he's below color matching. Nothing against Alex. I would hang out with Alex. We talk about G.I. Joe all the time. He's just not going to fight.
He wouldn't know what he was saying.
He's just not going to fight Magneto anytime soon.
But you would just go, what's Blowtorch's name?
Yeah.
Well, for example, Alex can tell you that Shipwreck's real name is Hector Delgado.
Yeah.
And that he's...
Really?
Yeah, that he's
Hector
born...
X Delgado.
So Hector X Delgado, and he was born in Chula Vista.
That is not how he was played on the television.
No.
He was not a proud Latino man on that show.
He grew up near the San Diego Navy Yards.
I believe the toys were made with a lot more diversity
in
mind. In
the two-part episode, There's No Place Like Springfield, he revealed he lied about being the minimum age of 17 in order to join up.
I remember that.
Yeah. He would also be able to tell you that Leatherneck was Wendell A. Metzger from Stromsburg, Nebraska. Now, I couldn't tell you about the Nebraska
right,
part.
But just the
name,
yeah.
I'm just telling you, he's from Stromsburg.
I think it's
Wendell
also-
Metzger.
Could
Wendell Metzger.
Could Alex also tell you that Shipwreck dislikes the use of quote unquote gadgets in war? And that see the target, shoot the target is his philosophy?
He hated buttons.
Snack, right, a snack.
He hated buttons. He didn't even like buttons. He's like, fuck this, I'm not buttoning this shirt.
Now, where does a parrot fit into that?
It's more of a friend than a gadget. I could do this all day.
You just wanted to talk about G.I. Joe.
Yeah,
that's all you wanted to
really
do.
Well,
Alex would come by and he'd be like, can I go now? I go,
no, wait.
Tell me about barbecue.
So what do you know about Zorana, though?
Oh, right. What was her name?
That's Zorana.
What was her full name?
Zorana Delgado.
There were. If this week, the Hollywood Reporter put out a oral history of the G.I. Joe cartoon, and there actually is a part where they talk about how they made it very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, they made
big.
They did that very. Her name is Zoe. First of all, Josh, Zoe
Zartan's a nickname. I thought that was his real name.
I think it's his last name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So her
Zoe
last name
Zartan.
Is different
yeah.
than his.
No, her last name is Zartan. She's
Zoe Zartan.
But she was Zorana.
No way. It says real name, last name unknown.
Ooh.
But she's Zartan's sister, so she has to. This
maybe
is
Zartan
confusing.
Isn't his real name. Zartan is a whole mystery.
I thought they were the kids. There was the
Xandar.
Xandar and Zarana were the
twins.
Zachary is Xandar's name, and he was Zartan's brother. He was voiced by Peter Cullen. Oh. Zartan.
Rat Hole.
This is a rat hole. Zartan, name unknown. That's why I love that about G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was like, oh my God, what is his name? It's unknown.
Kept me up at night.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
But
so, Mark Bovenzi, he can change one tire extremely quickly.
Just
but
one.
The rest are regular speed. So it represents a 25% savings.
Is it just a...
He has super... So if he worked at the store...
The tire place,
yeah. Right? He can do the first one at super speed.
It's like...
Then the rest are normal.
So if he's got like four cars on the line, can he just do the first tire on all four? Or is it he can do a fast one every fourth tire?
It works either way. It's that 25% of that tire can be done
at super
speed.
What if it's one of those cars that only have three wheels?
The limitation is that, like the power is good. The restriction
it's weird, right? Yeah, I don't know.
So he could work on a NASCAR pit crew.
Yeah,
just changing the one tire.
But he's valuable because he's saving everybody.
Well, sometimes 25%. They only need the chance. They pull it up. They just do the one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the problem is that quarter way through that job on the one, he goes to regular speed.
What? So, wait,
it's weird.
That doesn't make
sense. Quarter way through the first tire?
So you're only changing one tire?
25% of any tire job.
So,
no, I just changed.
Yeah.
No, come on, man. You're the worst improv partners ever. You're supposed to say yes and, but...
Well, no, but these are rules.
All right. So you can do the one tire.
Okay.
You can do the one tire.
There you go. All right, well, so thank you, Lucas Barwald, Ian Matthews-Spillane, Alex Ferrer, and Mark Bovenzi for being loyal iFanboy patrons. And you can get your superpower by going to patreon.com/iFanboy and signing up.
Yeah, I like that people are excited, are enjoying this part.
Yeah.
Because it's fun for us.
It is, yeah, it's a blast.
Let's plug some upcoming shows, because you know you don't listen to this part of the show. We released a Booksplode this week, where the return of the Booksplode again via the patrons. That was one of our goals we hit this week, this month. We talked about Dark Knight, a True Batman Story by Paul Dini and Eduardo Risso. And we was doing a Booksplode every other month, alternating with a Talksplode. And so you can find it on the feed right behind this show. Lots of fun to talk about, and a really great book.
Yep. And as far as other podcasts coming up, the next super comic book theme media thing will be Luke Cage, the highly anticipated series from Netflix, which is coming at the end of September. I'm a big fan of Mike Coulter, who plays Luke Cage, so I cannot wait. At some point, we'll probably talk about it. Probably not.
Not the day it comes out. Also, hopefully not as long as it took us to talk about Daredevil Season 2.
Yes.
That was like 2 months later.
Exactly. So we'll see. But that said, Luke Cage is on our radar, so don't worry. It's coming.
And finally, if you can't stand this, you need more, you should go to Goodfellas. You can't stand this ending. You can go to GoodfellasMinute.com and you can listen to the 145 episodes we did talking about Goodfellas one minute at a time.
This is a show about Godfather?
It's not about Godfather. Those are two different films in the American
gangster
genre.
This is the Carlito's Way podcast.
Again, that's a Cuban gangster. No, is it? No, he's in Miami. That's Scarface.
I never actually saw Carlito's Way.
Not so worth it.
Sean Penn's in that, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, he is. He's a lawyer.
Yeah, it's not. Oh,
I've never seen it, but I know he's a lawyer.
He had the fro.
He had the fro. Yeah. So, when is the anniversary of us starting that?
21st. No, the
25th?
It's the 23rd or 4th, I think.
All right, so this might be the last time we've mentioned the show.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Okay.
We talked about it for a year.
Yeah,
that's fair. Fun.
Every now and then.
So get to goodfellasminute.com. That will be there even if we don't keep talking about it.
And you can head over to ifanboy.com and comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find our other podcasts that we just mentioned earlier. Follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before we do the show. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, Ron XO.
And if you like what you're listening to, go to iTunes, leave a review, or any other spot where you can leave a review. Just let people know how much you like iFanboy. We thank everybody who does that. Spread the word. It's great to see you guys talking about how you like the show on Twitter and on Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And we thank everybody for that. But help us spread the word about iFanboy. You are our favorite people, and thank you. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this week. Next week, we'll be back to normal. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye. All I want is one more chance.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.